Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Today is New Year's Eve's Eve. It's the 30th of December, 2015. I'm John Williams, and this is another edition. The last one, I guess, we record for 2015 of the Mincing Rascals. Today with Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Kristen. Kristen's an editorial writer there and sometimes columnist. And Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune columnist, joins us again as well.
Hi, Eric. Such an honor to be here, John.
Hey, this is your baby. Not only is this your idea, but you named the Mincing Rascals,
I'm not kidding. It is an honor to be here.
We should all bow.
This is my favorite half hour of the week.
He's getting emotional.
Well, and I get to drive. Steve Bertrand can't join us today. He's on vacation with his son. I believe they're returning a jacket, which he said was too large or didn't fit. So let's talk about a few of the stories in the news, as we always do. We'll start today with the story of, gosh, here we go again, guys, another cop shooting in Chicago. I wonder if this is going to be a theme this year. The new year will certainly start off with this. In this case, it's the police go to a house where they've received a couple of 911 calls. They come up to a door, and as they're going up the steps, out comes a young Quintonio LeGreer. He's 19 years old. The police shoot him multiple times, dead. He did not have a gun, but he came at them with the bat. And one of the errant bullets hit a woman behind him who was inside, Betty Jones. And people are calling once again for Rahm's. They want Rahm out, and they want the police to be less free with their guns. This, to me, is not a Laquan McDonald case. At least it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't, to me, sound as though the cops were acting completely, irrationally. So nobody benefits from any of these people getting shot. One came out with the cops. The other was an innocent bystander. But I don't think it's the same kind of story as we had with Laquan McDonald. Kristen, what's standing out with you on this story?
Well, a couple of things. One, we don't know. I feel like we can't trust the police account of how these situations unravel. So I'm not going to just take it for truth that this kid lunged at them with the bat. If there is a video that emerges, they haven't said whether or not there is video of this. I don't know if the police were wearing anything on their lapels or if somebody else caught it on tape, but that will be obviously a crucial part. The other thing that stands out to me about this was a college student who it's unclear whether he was having some sort of mental issues, but there is a really poignant story in today's Sun-Times that talks about how this was a kid who kind of beat the foster care system, went on to college, had such a promising future, and it just makes it all the more heartbreaking that he died in a shower of bullets.
Yeah, it's difficult to know exactly what happened here. The police account hasn't even been very thorough, right? We don't really know how they came to shoot Betty Jones. Was she standing next to him? Were they firing wildly and hit him? We haven't had that conversation. We also don't know what the police knew. There's been a lot of criticism about the police not handling correctly a mental health disturbance, which is what this may have been. But what we know about the 911 calls so far is that the police who were asked to respond to the scene weren't told that it was a mental health issue. They just heard it was a guy with a bat threatening people. If, in fact, he is threatening a police officer with a bat and he's close to the officer is entitled to fire. I mean, that is a baseball bat is deadly force. And exactly where Betty Jones was and how irresponsible the officer was, we don't really know yet. I'm just tempted to reserve judgment. You're right, Chris. We don't even know what the police version is, and we have no reason, really, given all the things that have happened in the last year, to trust the police version.
Yeah, right.
But this is one where I just want to know more before I decide to set my outrage meter. I was shocked when I heard this story. I was like, what?
Well, I was shocked how quickly it happened. I would just think, God, if the cops would ever be reserved in their judgment about using their guns, it would be now. And we weren't there. And this doesn't matter either, but he did have a rap sheet, right? He had an instance where he punched a girl on campus at Northern Illinois University in the chest. He had incidents where he was stealing items from stores. There was half a dozen or more counts on his record. in Chicago and in DeKalb. So that you know, so he's not a perfect maybe citizen. Not that that maybe matters, but I guess it is reasonable based on that to suspect that he was acting violently, that he was coming after the police. He had a violent past. And I don't know what his mental health was. His father was one of the people that called to say, I'm fearful for my life. My son's banging on the door with a baseball
bat.
But
he didn't say he's got mental health issues. And it's not clear that he did have mental health issues, right?
But, you know, the idea that a baseball bat is a deadly weapon, I guess it is. But I wish the police, when they start to retrain them, would begin to entertain the idea of, oh, my God, we told that man to stop. He won't stop. He's running at us with a baseball bat. You have a lot of options there. Like, you run away or back off, retreat quickly. Or you could say, no, a baseball bat's a deadly weapon. And he came at us. He disobeyed our order. We all should obey the cops. Therefore, we get to shoot him dead? You know, that to me should be the very last option under consideration. And yet, it seems to be the option for police these days. That really needs to change.
Well, the mayor is actually having a press conference where he's going to talk a little bit about how they are going to, like you said, retrain police so that they learn to de-escalate situations instead of escalate them when they show up on the scene. So he's going to talk about that. He's going to talk about how they want every officer to be equipped and trained with tasers by next summer. Again, I'm just, you know, is this enough for what is, you know, a systemic and probably cultural problem in the department? I don't know. But I do think in this case, this man, I guess, teenager, his behavior, from what we know, leading up until the point that he went away to school, was pretty calm and peaceful. So I think it does point to him having some sort of bipolar issues or mental health issues, that he started acting so erratically once he got to school. And you're right. He has, I don't know yet that he had a rap sheet in Chicago, but he did in DeKalb.
In DeKalb.
School.
Well, suppose, I mean, I'm less impressed with the urgency of his mental health. I mean, maybe that made him erratic, but I still think if in fact his intent was to club the baseball bat on, you know, to club the police officer with the baseball bat, rational or otherwise, there's got to be a better way to take down a 19-year-old man with a baseball bat than with deadly force with a gun.
I mean, John, you know, I'm quick to criticize myself also in these situations, but if they're in a narrow staircase or something, if their mode of retreat is somehow blocked, I mean, we just don't know. I don't have a picture in my mind's eye. I kind of think that if the innocent bystander hadn't been shot, that this would not be quite as big a story. That's what really gives me questions. Okay, so you're going to fire. If you're going to use deadly force, be precise about it. For goodness sake, don't just fire your gun wildly and hit some poor woman who answered the door. So, yeah.
I've been saying this since Ferguson, too, that the business of doing the work that we ask the police to do. Remember, the calls came from within the house. He may have placed one of the calls himself. I mean, this is the business of doing police work is not pretty and can be, in fact, violent work. Sometimes you do have to punch and kick and wrestle and shoot people. That's what we ask the police to do. And here were the cops coming to the aid of 911 calls from the black community. They were asked to intervene in this situation. So I want to be very sympathetic to how difficult their job is and how awful it will look to the rest of us when we're watching it detached. But so that's my giant caveat to I think the police are arriving on the scene with sort of a predetermined way to handle this. And I think they almost would regard strategic retreat as a compromise, as a surrender. They don't want to do that. They want to, you know, we told you to do this. And when they don't, they get ticked. It just seems like the adrenaline's flowing. These guys are angry. I'm talking about the police now. And they resent that these people aren't obeying their orders. Which, by the way, if you ask a talk show audience, what should we do? They all say, well, when I get pulled over, I do exactly what the police say. And so people just don't understand anybody that would go at the cops. And the cops don't like it either. And so the next thing you know, they're using their weapons in instances where I wasn't there either, Eric. I want to believe is often not necessary. Whew. So that's a long statement, but I think that's where we are right now.
I mean, it sounds like this case unfolded so quickly. The woman who was accidentally shot was opening the door for police. She was trying to, you know, help her upstairs neighbor, and she's opening the door, and they are shooting in the doorway.
Yeah.
I don't want to just over-speculate, but if in fact this kid was charging at police and did have a baseball bat and was going through emotional problems, you know, there is this thing called death by cop suicide, death by suicide, where you actually try to get the police to shoot at you. And there are some, I don't know, that sounds like it could be it.
Well, are you guys surprised that Jason Van Dyke, the police officer charged with shooting Laquan McDonald, is pleading not guilty? Is that the way these things go? Because it sure looks like he's guilty to me.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. A murder one charge is going to be hard to uphold against him anyway. I don't know that a plea is in the cards. I think it's very hard to convict police officers, even in this case, even when there's video. So I think we're looking at a long trial ahead.
And even if a plea bargain was in the cards, a not guilty plea is the opening gambit anyway. I mean, it's very, very rare for someone to come and plead guilty. I mean, we saw it last year with Barbara Bird Bennett, right? She kind of came and threw herself on the mercy of the court. And also Hastert pleaded guilty pretty quickly, too. But even at first, I think Hastert pleaded not guilty. So there's, you know, it's not at all surprising that he did that.
Well, I worry for the city, Eric, if there isn't a conviction of a serious charge against Jason Van Dyke in this case. His attorney said the video's two-dimensional. You don't see everything that happened. There's another side to the story. He did feel genuinely threatened. Maybe that's just posturing in his part, but I thought, man, if they get this wrong, if this guy is not convicted of some serious offense, that's just going to put fuel on that fire.
Oh, yeah.
Feels Rodney King-like, doesn't it?
Oh, God, in waiting. You know, it's like, right. And again, that's not fair to Van Dyke, maybe. We weren't there, but Lord, it's hard to justify that video. Eric Zorn posted in his column. Is it in the column, Eric? Because I just saw it online.
The questionnaire is only online. I'm going to post the results of this questionnaire. It's a Predict the News poll. I do this every year. I ask readers to join me in predicting the news for the coming year. And it's a 30-question questionnaire. That's at chicagotribune.com/Zorn. And it closes on New Year's Eve. But it's there. And I'm going to write about the results in Sunday's paper. But I wanted to get your input on some of these questions anyway, to see what you think.
Okay, so I picked a dozen questions I thought we could use in this podcast. Is that all right with you, Eric?
That's great. Let's
okay,
do that.
Okay, so I'll be you here. I'll ask the questions.
You ask the questions, and we'll give the answers. And you give your answer, too, because I'm making a note of this, and I'm gonna talk.
You asked who the Republican nominee is going to be. Rubio. Kristen, what do you think?
Rubio.
I say Paul Ryan.
See, you're not even taking your own poll seriously.
I am
now
taking it seriously because I think that the Republican nominating process is going to be so up and down that they're going to get to the convention without a clear winner, without someone who's going to win on the first ballot, and they're going to settle on Speaker Ryan. He's been vetted nationally in the 2012 election. He's got conservative bona fides. He's young. He's well-spoken. And he's going to pick for his vice presidential nominee. I'm going to go with that question next.
Yeah.
He's going to pick Rubio to be his vice president.
But I'm sorry, but is Paul Ryan running for president right now?
No, he is not. That's why he's going to be so appealing.
This is a bold prediction.
Wow,
that's bold.
Boy, if you win, you could get all the rest of them wrong. If you get this one right, you will be king.
The end zone dance. So what do you think is going to be vice president?
I'm going to go with Kasich because he's from an important state. How about you, Kristen?
I'm going Carly Fiorina. I think he's going to be looking for a female. She's also from an important state. They've been very, you know, not too brutal against each other during these debates. So I'm going with Carly.
I think her state is important, but there's no way that a Republican is going to win that state. So anyway, I'm going with Rubio, Florida.
And by the way, so none of us are thinking Trump, obviously, and none of us are thinking Trump is going to win the nomination then, right, Eric?
No, none of us do, but we have been wrong about Trump all year, so why not start it end the year with another thing that may be wrong?
Well,
I just talked to Stantis. I saw him in the halls, and he says Nikki Haley is going to be the vice presidential nominee.
Oh, she would be good, too.
So,
editorial
very
cartoonist for the Tribune, Scott Stantis. Okay, how about this one? You asked Eric, who will win the election, a Democrat or a Republican? I think that's a very good way to put it. Kristen, what's your answer to that?
I think Hillary Clinton is going to win.
Yeah, I said a Republican.
Really?
Yeah, because I think it'll be Hillary, and I think her negatives are so high that even weak, sweet-faced Marco Rubio, with the right politics at play, could beat her. I'm not loving that, but I think that could happen.
I'm feeling another first, you know, first woman. She's going to get so much momentum from that, just like Barack Obama did, that I think it's going to be tough for the Republicans to beat her.
How about you, Eric?
Oh, I'm going with Hillary Clinton also. I'm going with the Democrats.
Democrat. You asked Eric, Anita Alvarez will get reelected, yes or no? I'm going to say no. I think this is too big for her. How about you, Kristen?
No.
Yeah,
no.
I agree with that.
This does not reflect my own personal sentiment as to whether she should, but she's just, this is too much to overcome for her in this environment.
She's the one upon whom the public is going to be able to take out their rage over the Laquan McDonald case. You can't. Rahm Emanuel is not going to resign, no matter what anyone likes. Gary McCarthy's gone. Anita Alvarez is in the line of fire, so to speak.
Is that fair, Eric?
Yeah, I think in some ways it is fair. Also, because of some other things in her record, she is very vulnerable, and I think she's going to go down on the primary.
Eric asked if Mark Kirk will get reelected. I've always been amazed that he got elected. I'm amazed that he's still sitting in the U.S. Senate. In fact, I think he's sitting in the U.S. Senate right now. How about?
What does that mean?
Oh my goodness!
What does that mean?
That was just a cheap shot.
That was so cheap.
Oh goodness!
I'm sorry. I'll go first. I don't think he'll get reelected. How about you, Eric?
I said no.
No.
Well, okay. I laid my cards out. Why do you guys think he doesn't get reelected? I presume he runs.
Oh, sure.
He's running.
He's running. He's the front runner. He will be the nominee. I don't know that it's so much Mark Kirk. I mean, he does obviously have some health issues that are raising questions about just his capabilities. Tammy Duckworth is just a really hard candidate to beat. She's gotten much more polished. She is a war veteran. She is she's warm. And at the end of the day, people vote for whom they like. And I just think she's more likable.
And Kirk, because of his health problems, is not nearly as impressive a figure in debates as he used to be. His whole manner of his affect is not settling in terms of being somebody you want representing you in the Senate. So I think he's got political trouble for that. It's a shame because I'm not sure that his mental faculties are at all diminished, but he's not presenting that well on the campaign.
Well, and that's part of the job, though. If your mental ability is great, but your ability to express it or exert it isn't there, then what a shame that you physically aren't able to keep the job. And I think that's a fair sort of assessment. That's not even a criticism. That's just an assessment. You asked, Eric, if we'll get a budget deal in Illinois by the 1st of July, by Labor Day, or if we'll get one this year at all, right?
Yeah, the question is when, if ever, are we going to have a budget? Are they going to agree to a compromise before July 1st for this fiscal year, which ends July 1st? Or are they going to come up with a two-year budget plan? Or are they going to still not have a budget? And a year from now, we're going to be saying, will Illinois ever have a budget again?
Is the Illinois lottery paying out now on the big winnings?
Yes.
So they've resolved that? You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking
Kristen
about, right?
Kristen is making a face.
I'm just making a confused face.
I don't know that they have.
I don't think they have. I think the large prizes are still not being paid out.
I think they're getting IOUs. Well, then how does the state operate without a quote-unquote budget, Eric? What does this mean?
Well, 90% of the budget has been with special agreements and court orders and federal mandates is being spent. There's only about 10% of it that's not being spent. Am I right about
that,
Kristen?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they are able just to go along because their money is coming in. I mean, you're paying taxes. All this stuff is coming into the comptroller's office. She's writing checks as ordered by the state. It's just not following any budget. Right
now.
Oh,
I see. Yeah,
it's following the previous year's
budget, which is a nightmare because the previous year's budget was based on a tax rate of 5%. It's now at 3.75. So they have this gap, and I calculated that every day Illinois is $16 million more in the red every single day.
Oh, that is just chump change, Eric.
It adds up.
$16
million. I know it's $16 million here and there, but as it goes along.
Did Bruce Rauner get elected because, I mean, was the budget dynamic in Illinois part of the reason that Rauner got elected?
I don't know if I would say the budget dynamic, but the overall economic health of the state, yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's an awkward way for me to put it then, but I mean, it's the income and the outgo, and he was going to do something about that, right? I mean, isn't it amazing that this far into his term, in fact, we're still operating with the the budget, if you will, that he was running against, or the economy that he was trying to improve. Is it fair to say we really haven't gotten off the dime since he became governor if we're still operating with the old budget?
I think you can say in a nonpartisan way, yes, that's fair to say, right?
Yeah.
No, we're
on different sides on this one. Why are you making a face, Kristen?
His hands are tied because the legislature sent him a budget that was $4 billion out of whack. They admitted it. And he vetoed it. So they
invited him to line item veto it, and he didn't want to.
That is true.
And he also submitted a budget plan that was itself $3 billion out of whack.
I don't want to get into that.
I know. So you've opened up a can of worms here, but let's in the prediction, I'll go first. I think that what's going to happen is that sometime before Labor Day, sometime after the March primary, they're going to get together, they're going to come up with a 2-year budget. It makes no sense after March to make a 1-year budget.
They can't. They'd have to change the Constitution.
Oh, whoops.
The Constitution requires that we have an annual budget process. So number one is what has to happen. Sometime between January and May, they will settle the current budget year, and then they have to pass another budget, which is what they did last year, too. They were sort of fixing the budget from the previous year while looking at a new spending plan.
Hmm. Well, then I'm going to go with not at all.
Okay, perfect.
I hope that satisfies your poll there, Eric.
It does, yes.
Former Chicago Public Schools CEO Barbara, Bird Bennett, right?
Correct. Bird Bennett
goes to jail for, Eric asks, less than 4 years, 4 to 7, 7 to 9, or 9 plus.
And I want to say the prosecutors have agreed to about 7.5 years, but this is before the judge has weighed in. So
what do we know about the judge? Is the judge going to maybe give the state more than they even asked for?
I don't know. I mean, judges can really go off on their own on these things. And I think the betrayal that she perpetrated was significant and enormous. She pleaded guilty.
She pleaded guilty, which I think they will show her some mercy. So I'm going with less than 4 years.
I went 4 to 7 also.
And by the way, I think it is a 4 to 7 year crime, incidentally. I don't think it's more than 7 years.
I want to say just a little preview that readers have waited, and they think it's going to be 7 to 9 years.
Mm. So. Wow. You know, I think we're all voting. How do we know? I think we're all voting what we think a just sentence would be. Is that where you are in that,
John,
Kristen?
The premise of this is that we know a lot, and that's why we're presuming to do this.
Yeah. So. We'll see how any of this goes then. Does Blago get a sentence reduction of a couple of years? Eric, why are you so intrigued by that?
I've been intrigued by the Blagojevich case forever. I mean, it's an incredible story.
He kind of has a man crush in a twisted way.
I kind of forgot. I stopped thinking about him. And every now and then he pops up for this kind of reason. But I think he went. I also think Blago is in jail for too long.
Mm-hmm. I do, too.
Do you think so, Kristen? Or do you think his sentence was appropriate?
I mean, at the time, I thought it was appropriate. Looking back now and seeing some other corruption cases that have gotten lighter sentences, I think it was excessive, and I do think he will get a reduction.
Wow. Yeah.
I said no.
I don't think he will. I think I have no trouble with it, but I think I said no in your poll.
Right. Okay. Well, see, what happens is that this has gone. The appellate court has said they've thrown out some of the charges, but they're smaller charges. They sent it back to the trial judge, Zagel, for resentencing. Zagel hates Blagojevich. I mean, you can just tell. You can just tell by watching that. I was sat in on some of that trial. He doesn't like Blagojevich. And I think he's going to say, you know, nah, these aren't significant enough. I'm not going to give you 2 years. The question was 2 years or more. I say no. I think he's going to still be in there. And I don't think I agree with Kristen. I think it's too much at this point.
As I was thinking about this question today, I was reminded that Blago was on the Celebrity Apprentice show with Donald Trump.
Right.
And it was interesting to see Trump's assessment of Blago, because Blago had been disgraced by then, obviously. And there he is, you know, not doing the chores for Donald Trump's team and just being a goof, just being, you know, ineffectual, just
he didn't
worthless.
Even know how to use email,
right? Yeah.
He didn't know how to use the computer, and Trump remembers
worthless.
That.
Yeah, and but I, as I recall, this is one of us. Eric, you got to go back and look this up. I think Trump kind of liked him, and he didn't think he was a bad guy, and he bought Blago's lines that he didn't do anything wrong and stuff like that. I thought Trump was a very poor judge of Blago's character on that show.
Well, that's an interesting thing to look back on, John.
Go back and watch the video. Okay, Jason Van Dyke's legal status. We've touched on this a little bit. Kristen, you go first. Eric, well, maybe you should help us with this, Eric.
Well, it's always an open question whether these cases will get to trial. Things move so slowly in Cook County. So one of my options was awaiting trial. But the main options are acquitted, convicted of first-degree murder, and convicted of a lesser charge. I think Kristen is already on record in this conversation as saying lesser charge, right?
Yeah, I think I'm with Kristen on that. I think he'll be convicted, and nobody benefits from this going more than 12 months, and it won't be first-degree, so lesser charge.
I'm saying awaiting trial.
You're saying, awaiting trial.
I think eventually he will, it could be a lesser charge. I don't think murder one will hold up. But
you think it'll take more than 12 months to get through this?
It seems to, doesn't it?
Will.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
There's so many things in the police contract. This is a slow system here.
No, it's not. It's fast and efficient. It only took 400 days to get the video
right out.
Come on. Yeah, so maybe I'm wrong on this one. Yeah, U.S. will suffer a terror attack worse than San Bernardino this year. I think, yes. I think that's the world we're going to live in. How about you guys?
No, I'm going to just say no out of hopefulness that
I'm saying no. I'm saying no as well, even though it's it is out of hopefulness, not out of any particular optimism over this. But
well, I was actually thinking about that because I thought, okay, San Bernardino was terrible and shocking and homegrown in a way and all of those things. But a legitimate terrorist attack, it falls into that category, I guess. But in the grand scheme of things, 330 million Americans living in this country and less than two dozen die in this terrible thing. That's a ratio that I think if we had to live with that, I guess my point is my expectation that we'll have something like that or worse. What I'm trying to say is that's not such a terrible calculus. We can live with that, as bad as that is.
Although it freaked people out plenty. I mean, it came shortly after Paris, right? I mean,
And
the sense that the world has changed in this terrible way. How long has it been before San Bernardino where we had that many people killed? Was it Sandy Hook? I'm not sure that was terrorism. It's just mental illness. That guy was just nuts. I don't think he had a political agenda.
What about Boston? I don't know.
Boston, but Boston was terrible. I think only three or four people died there.
Yeah, true.
And Fort Hood before that. So I mean, this stuff happens with some regularity. But you like to think that maybe
if Steve Bertrand were here, I think he'd now be making the point that it's still a very safe place to live, and that our reaction politically to terrorism right now is off the charts overreacting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sure Steve would be, he's making that point even as he listens to this podcast.
I hear his voice in my head.
You asked some sports questions, Eric. You have to when you do these things. We'll start with the Cubs. You asked about that, right?
I did.
Okay.
Kristen's indifference is enormous. I can look at it.
We'll get to the White Sox here. I'm going to say that the Cubs will win the World Series.
Right.
That sounds like, that's just what you people say. But it is, at least this year, looking forward to next season, as logical a guess, a prediction, as you could make for any team in baseball. So, sure, why not? The Cubs. I'll say yes.
Kristen?
it pains me to say it, but I think they'll lose in the World Series. But
I do too.
I think they'll get there.
I do too. I think that this is incremental. This team is still young. They're going to need that World Series experience. I think they're going to lose in like six games in the World Series, but 2 years from now, yes, they'll win.
Yeah, well, my first vote was going to be, they'll lose in the World Series, but I thought, if you can get them to the World Series, let them win the thing too. So I put him down for that. White Sox, I don't think they're going to win the World Series. Was that your questionnaire?
No, same options. Do they make the postseason? Do they lose in the playoffs? Do they lose in the series? Do they win the series?
I don't see them playing in October, unless it's a regularly scheduled late game.
a snow day or something. Yeah.
How about you, Kristen, White Sox fan, McQuarrie?
No postseason. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just have lost faith in management there, so no.
What did you say, Eric? No?
I agree with all of you guys. Yeah, no postseason for the White Sox.
So you're asking about the Blackhawks too. I mean, this season wraps around 2015 into 2016. Are you asking, will they win the Cup this year, this June?
No, I'm going to ask, did they win it last year? No, of course. I mean, this season, this current season.
Yeah, I guess so. But then 26, but you know, it's easier
June.
To guess
yes.
this year because you got half the cards in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they win the Stanley Cup this year. Was that the questionnaire?
Yes, that was the question, and that is your answer.
Okay.
Kristen?
Oh, I'm sorry. Where are we?
Blackhawks win
no,
the...
No.
Oh, that's right. Kristen's got to go. Kristen has to be at an important press conference, then it'll be about things besides Patrick Kane.
Well, we have one more question, right? So,
all right. Well, do you have time to answer one more? Will Golden State beat the Bulls 72-10 regular season record? I'm in for yes, and I hope they do. This is fun. How about you, Kristen?
Yeah, I'm in for yes.
Yeah, I'm in for yes, too, so... All right, we're all down. This is going to be online. All your predictions are going to be online.
No.
Suckers.
Ugh, I would have said something different about the Cubs.
Accountability.
I'm going to lose all my street cred with my Sox.
2016 is all about accountability.
You lost street cred when you said you were a White Sox fan. So don't worry about it, Kristen. All right, Kristen McQuarrie writes for the Chicago Tribune. Go, Kristen. Go. I just have one more question for you, Eric.
Okay.
In your Chicago Tribune column, you wrote about, and you're also asking people to participate online as well in your... is this an annual 10-minute thing?
No, I did it myself personally 2 years ago. I decided I was going to commit 10 minutes a day to getting better at the fiddle. I play fiddle, and I put it away for about 30 years.
Is fiddle the same as violin?
It's the same. It's the same instrument, and it's tuned the same, but the kind of music you play on it is quite a bit different. So, yeah,
right.
And I committed to doing that. I did it for a year. It was very successful.
What so you did 10 minutes of practice or 10 minutes of work on it, maybe reading music, but you committed yourself to 10 minutes of
every day, 365
days. You did not miss a day.
Didn't miss a day.
Wow.
And worked out, and I got quite a bit better. Played in the Midwest Fiddle Championships 2 years ago. My family band came in second in the band division of the Midwest Fiddle Championships this year. I did it again this year, but this year it was a public thing. I invited other people to join me last year for 2015 and say, you know, send me your projects, and we'll check in at the end of the year and see how that went. And I got about 80 people who said that they would do this, and I checked in with them recently and found about, you know, close to half of them had success with it, and other half not so much.
This was based on a book written by a woman who said you can improve your life in 10 minutes a day if you just have the discipline to only find 10 minutes, but 10 minutes every day to commit to something.
Yeah, and she's exactly right. Because the problem with any of us in reaching any of these kind of goals is that every day we face this inertia, right? And even getting a project started, whether it's, you know, writing a memoir or organizing your photos or learning a language or learning how to draw, some other skill, some computer skill, anything like that is regular applications of effort. 10 minutes a day doesn't sound like much, but that's 60 hours a year. Or it's 60 hours over the course of a year of working at something. And also you find that when you say, okay, I'm just going to do 10 minutes, 10 minutes becomes 15, becomes 20, becomes 30. You know, when I start practicing, sometimes I look up, it's been half an hour, but it's fun. Once I get over the idea that, you know, because I'll be sitting there, honestly, there'll be times at 11 o'clock at night where I'm tired and I haven't done it yet. And then I'll think, it's just 10 minutes. I'll pull it out. I'll just go through some scales. I'll work on some tunes, whatever. And so I'll do it. And sometimes after the timer rings after 10 minutes, I put it away and run off to bed. And other times I go, I'm just about there. And I'll spend another 10 minutes or more working at it. It's all about inertia and momentum. It's not about the 10 minutes.
And it's about a specific goal, too.
It's about a specific goal. You can't say, I'm going to meditate or something. A lot of people said they had those kind of things. Those are like more resolutions. You need something specific, like I want to try to finish this project or I want to develop this skill. And it's worked, it worked really well for me. And I played fiddle for four square dances last year, which is a huge
irony.
I hadn't done that in 30 years. So
it was funny to me that the woman upon whose book you based your concept and followed through religiously, when she found out that you were going to do this, she said, okay, I'm in. I'll do my own book project for the year. And she wasn't able to do it.
She
quit.
Things, yeah. It's actually...
Well, I think that takes some of the credibility out of her concept. Although you're proof that it works.
And there were a number of people who in the readers who responded to this. And if anyone in our Mincing Rascals listening audience, our international audience, wants to write me, ericzorn@gmail.com, and just tell me what you want to do. I'll put you on the list, and then I'll check in with you in a year, and we'll sort of take stock of how it worked for you. I came up with some other guidelines for this year just to make it a little bit more focused, to remind people that it's not about accumulating 10 minutes. So if you miss a day, don't try to, like, I'll do 20 minutes tomorrow. No, just get back on the 10-minute horse, because if you can't become a burden, you have to be able to miss a couple of days and get back on it. I happen not to have missed any days because I'm kind of type A like that, but it's perfectly possible to, you know, take a vacation or to miss some days or get sick. And, you know, I mean, I did it through eye surgery, so, you know, it's...
Wow. So, and people were describing the things, you described the things people were going to commit 10 minutes to per day for the year. One woman's project was to reduce her 60 boxes of books to 15. She was going to have to go through them and make painful decisions. And I guess 10 minutes a day over the course of a year, you could get that done.
Easily. Imagine you had like Thanksgiving weekend, 4 days, and you were going to work 12 hours each day solidly in your house on some project. I'm going to spend all 12 hours working on, you know, eliminating clutter in my basement or clearing out my book collection. You'd easily get it done over that long weekend, 12 hours a day working at it. So the idea that 10 minutes a day isn't that much. Now, the problem is you get started and then you put it away. You get started, you get put away, and there's some starting and stopping issues. But over the course of time, you were going to get that done. Now, this woman you referred to fell off the wagon. She took a vacation, came back, and was tired and never got back to it. Other people, though, decided they were going to just kind of slow and steady. It's kind of the same insight that I gained when I decided to run a marathon. I don't know if you remember this, John. You were in town, weren't you? Back mm-hmm. in 98. I said, yep. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to form a club of people. We're going to do this. And I wasn't a runner, but I know from my reading, I knew from my experience that running a marathon is all about following a plan and just chipping away at it, doing it regularly, committing to it. And suddenly, you know, you're 8-10 months later, you're running a darn marathon. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So some of the stuff is rooted in that idea that you know, you can't all of a sudden decide you're going to organize your books and get it all done in a couple of days unless you've got tons of free time. And the idea that everyone says, "Oh, I don't have any time at all." Well, everyone's got 10 minutes. Everyone's got 10 minutes in a day. Most people spend an hour messing around on social media or watching bad TV. So there's time. You know, you got to commit to listening to the radio and podcasts. And then after that, there's your 10 minutes.
Send your commitment to Eric Zorn at ericzorn@gmail.com. I already sent Eric my 8 ideas. I have to now decide. My commitment this year is going to be to pick one for next year.
You had one about writing like a memoir or a family history or something like that.
I have a bunch of scenes in my head. My boy at his concert in the orchestra, or Grant, my other son, playing baseball, or family moments, sort of mental snapshots, some of them grand, some of them quite ordinary. And, you know, we're losing one of those memories every minute of every day. And I thought, oh, it's so fleeting. And the boys don't remember this. And I barely remember some of these things. I should just commit to, and it doesn't have to be a book or a memoir, just get those in some form on a Word document. Just start writing for 10 minutes a day things I remember about our lives.
I think that's a terrific idea, and it's something I'm doing with my own family right now. I interviewed my father for 6 hours, and I'm transcribing that for him. And my mother is doing her own little autobiography, and she asked me a bunch of questions. And the way I answered her was not I didn't type my answers. I used Dragon, which is one of these. It's the best voice recognition program. And I just put on the headset, opened up a Word document, and just talked, just spoke what I remembered of these things. And sometimes it's easier just to, when it comes to these kind of family memories, just to talk. And the machine is pretty good at recognizing what you're saying, and you go back and pretty it up a little bit. But, you know, if you want to do that, John, just strap on your headset and use this Dragon Naturally Speaking program. Sounds like an ad for them, but it really works quite well.
Yeah.
You don't have that, you know, your fingers poised over the keys going, how do I put this? You just talk.
I've used that Dragon software before. It's
phenomenal.
Really good.
It really is.
And each iteration of it gets better. I was using it a few years ago, and I'll bet it's better now.
It's fabulous.
Okay. So, Eric, I'll recommit now to, I'll send you the other email at ericzorn@gmail.com. And I'll somehow describe that every day for 10 minutes I'm going to write some personal memory of my immediate family.
And I'll be checking in with you in a year. But otherwise, we'll speak every week on the Mincing Rascals between now and then.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric Zorn. Kristen McQuarrie just checked out. Steve Bertrand wasn't able to join us. As we record this on Wednesday, December 30th, 2015, we'll be back on our usual Friday schedule starting next week. So a few days between this and the next one, but we'll be on our usual Friday drop schedule. Also, I want to thank Michael Heidemann, who's our producer for these segments, and he also has a podcast. I'm going to make this my recommendation today. It's called Sound Sessions. Sound Sessions. You can subscribe to that, listen to it. It's a couple of smart guys at WGN Radio following the local music scene. They interview artists and bands and talk about the music scene as it comes through.
Fiddle players?
No. No, I said music, Eric.
Oh, okay.
So that's my recommendation for the week.
Hey, I got a question for you about, speaking of your recommendation, you recommended Love Actually a few weeks
ago. The movie, yeah.
Yeah. Didn't you say that your son's podcast had a whole episode devoted to that?
I did.
Is that Anytime Minutes? Is that the name of the podcast?
That's the name of the podcast, that one just dropped last Thursday.
I've got to listen to that, because my family is riven by a bitter schisms over whether Love Actually is a great movie or
that is so interesting, because and Griff identified 9 storylines in it, and then they ranked them from the 9th worst to the very best storyline.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
So part of it is, wow, what a great movie for this story thread, and others they just think are terrible. And the funny thing is, we don't all agree. For some of us,
well,
the best storylines are the worst.
Since Kristen's gone, we're not under any time pressure. what is your favorite storyline in that movie?
We talked about this a lot over the holiday, and I would say I have tiers of them, but my top tier would include the one with Hugh Grant. You know, he's the prime minister. And we sort of follow his love life and his professional career. I'm a Hugh Grant fan, and he's so much fun in movies. So that one. But the one of his sister and the problems she and her husband have, because her husband has a crush on his secretary, I think that one is really good.
Go ahead.
And then finally, the one of the writer who falls in love with his housekeeper, but they don't speak a common language. Those are my 3 favorites.
Yeah, my favorite one is the one that you refer to, the sister. I'm blanking on the actor.
Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson, but the boss who plays. He's from the Harry Potter movies.
Yes.
Anyway, that was the most interesting storyline, the marriage that's kind of, you know.
Her scene when she finds out and she cries to herself is... is brilliant. She is so good.
Those who haven't seen this movie are just bored to tears right now. But anyway, my recommendation this week, my family has always really loved the series Freaks and Geeks,
yeah,
the old NBC series, and we had loaned it to some neighbors. And last night we invited these neighbors, and they hadn't watched the first episode of it, so we invited them over last night to watch the first episode with us again, because we hadn't seen it for a couple of years. What a great series Freaks and Geeks is. Oh, my goodness.
Really, I've not watched a minute of it.
Oh, my goodness. The first episode, it is funny, it's poignant, it's wonderful. It's about high school and about parenthood, and it's the first series that... James DeFranco was in, Seth Rogen, Linda Cardellini, some young, these actors who are now pretty well known this is their first big starring roles, or somebody else I'm forgetting too. But it's a terrific series, and it's on Netflix right now, I think, streaming on Netflix. Freaks and Geeks, watch episode 1, John. Tell me if you're not. It's like, yes.
Okay.
And it's only 13 episodes. It's not like you're committing to... You're committing your life over to an idea.
I'll watch it 10 minutes a day, every day, for the rest of the year.
For the rest of the week, and you'll get it done.
Eric Zorn, write to him now, ericzorn@gmail.com. You can read him in the Chicago Tribune at chicagotribune.com/Zorn. Kristen McQuarrie had to run away. She's an editorial writer there and a Sun-Times columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And our own Steve Bertrand joins us next year for these additional episodes of Mincing Rascals. Thanks to Michael Heidemann, whose podcast is titled Sound Sessions. That other one we referred to as Anytime Minutes. I should have thanked and mentioned Ben Cortez and Bob Ferguson. God bless them, everyone. And we are the Mincing Rascals.
Happy New Year.
You little rascal, you. You little rascal, you. You little rascal, you.